What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, back from vacation in Cape Cod. And it is the trade deadline in a week from today. Me and Paul Spore are going to be hosting our yearly trade deadline extravaganza here on YouTube and also on playback.tv/pitcher. So make sure you tune in for that. But to prepare for it, well, we got to talk starting pitchers at the trade deadline, and who better to bring in as a special guest just for this episode, of course. It is the man fresh off of an amazing adventure in Europe. It is the one and only Eno Saris. Eno, it's so good to see you again.
It's good to see you too. I drank all the beer in Germany and ate all the sausages, so there are none left.
Oktoberfest is canceled, everyone.
My kids were like, another beer garden? I was like, listen, you guys vetoed the second museum of the day, so here we go. Another beer garden it is.
What was the favorite one?
The cheesiest one. We went to the Hofbrauhaus in München in Munich, and like that's the one where they had like the Oompa Loompa band. And
wait,
like,
seriously?
Yeah, they had a band like doing like German polka music, and like they have these vaulted ceilings, and the steins are as big as your face, and it's been around since 1500, and you know, there were riots there once because the king tried to raise the price of beer like 15 cents at one point, and and the king was like, no, sorry.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh. I went to the Heineken Brewery, but I realized that's in Amsterdam.
So, yeah, I've been to that too. Yeah, that was a fun tour.
Yeah, I was 18 or so. I didn't actually drink, but and I remember my friends and I sent a video back to our parents because they had like back in like 2006, like the video you can send someone as you enjoy it. And we all did stereotypical, like, oh, I'm so drunk. Oh my God, hi. You know? Oh gosh, long time. I think I still have the bottle opener that they gave me from that one. Hate Heineken, terrible beer. Anyway, they are not sponsoring this podcast. No alcohol sponsor.
Chocolate Museum that was like that. They had like a video, and you got to take home a chocolate bar you made.
Oh my God. Oh, that's also
that was pretty good. Yeah,
but we're not talking about all of that. You know, that's a different type of trade. Yeah. We're going to talk about the trades that might be happening next week. And we've got an interesting list here. There is one at the top that I feel is fascinating, honestly. But I really want to explore it with Eno in this podcast. Just things that are not your typical names. Every single year we hear this, whoa, this trade out of nowhere happened. Oh my gosh, this is wild. All of that. And right now, it seems as though there is really one prize of it. Maybe there's like five, actually, I should say, ish. And who would be the number one that could get dealt at the trade deadline, you know?
Well, according to our big board over at The Athletic, we had Joe Ryan number one. But we also had a red light next to him.
Ooh.
And that means less likely to be dealt. And, you know, in terms of like guys who are likely to be dealt, the prize for me might be Edward Cabrera. But our second ranked was Seth Lugo. We have, you know, in Seth Lugo and Merrill Kelly, like these really polished number two threes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe threes. And that seems to be the most likely type of pitcher to be traded. But the one that's going to get a haul, the one that's most exciting, the one that really like could change everything we think about the trade deadline would be Joe Ryan. I think he's you know, the only reason that he could get traded is the Twins have been languishing, you know, for a little bit now. He's, you know, under team control to end of 2027, but that might be just enough to get, you know, a huge haul and, you know, maybe redo some of their pitching staff. But I have the Twins in high esteem. Like I don't think that they're a terrible team. I don't think they are bad. They're lacking direction. I think I like Zebby Matthews. I like some of the young pitchers. I would rather keep Joe Ryan. So I think Joe Ryan doesn't change places.
Yeah, this is something I think about all the time with the trade deadline. That there are a lot of there's a really good finance, really economist consultant that does a lot of stuff on YouTube. And he had this situation where he said, all right, in a town in England, they had 5 houses for sale of like 100 or so, right? And so someone wants to go and live in that town and they go, okay, cool. Well, these are the 5 that are on the market, right? But then they decide, you know what? Let's go to the 95 homes and see, hey, look, if we give you market value, which is this for this home, would you want to sell it? And they realize that about 20 to 25% are actually on the market on a given time, but only 5% of them are you aware of, right?
Wow.
And I've thought about that a lot since, because it really just says opportunities are not necessarily what is presented to you. It's what you make. And there are a lot of times in the trade deadline that we see stories get created where a team all of a sudden is very much in need. They didn't get any starter. And all of a sudden, say Joe Ryan's off the board and Alcantara and Lugo and Eric Cabrera, all these guys are gone. And there's a team that's like, wait, we really need to get a starter right now. All of a sudden, a team that is like, that wasn't really interested in putting someone on the table now might show up and say, great, we can get a premium for this. And
there's also the flip side of that, which is, let's say you're the Cubs and you're talking to the Marlins about Edward Cabrera. And they're just like, you know, we want Kevin Alcantara and Owen Casey and right. Cade Horton. And you're like, God damn, that hurt. Like, really? You need all that for Edward Cabrera, who just like 2 weeks ago couldn't find the zone? Like, really?
And also had fatigue and it was like a worry about his elbow. Yeah.
So then you call up the Twins.
Right.
And you say, hey, this is what they want for Edward Cabrera. You know, we might put more into this package for Joe Ryan. Like, are we starting to get somewhere? So, you know, that's, I think, like, you know, if the packages that the existing, like the people who are obviously on the market, if what they're asking for is too high, they might sort of uncover some pitchers that don't seem to be on the market that will become on the market because, you know, they're asking for too much, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, another team, and you think about it on a team level, like the Angels are like, no, we're kind of in this, you know, we're only, you know, 11 back in the day.
I was waiting for that.
but like of the third wild card, they're 5 back, you know, and we're almost sure. 500. Anyway, let's say they don't want to trade Kikuchi or Soriano because they're building towards something. And this is they're a little bit better this year. Well, you know, if they start to hear of some of these deals that are out there, they could say, well, that's actually better than I thought was going to be traded. So they could just jump in because they start to hear that, you know, the bidding is ferocious and they can be like, oh, does anybody want a Kikuchi or a Soriano? Like, does anybody want, like, you know, a high velocity sinker, you know, that's dealing right now. So, you know, there's teams that could jump in because of situational stuff. Yeah. And if the Angels lose the next 3 games, like,
I mean, that's the other thing too. These are like the most important games almost of the year. Of like, it's like the middle of July and then it's really September are the ones that are scrutinized the most, I think. And I actually remember before I really started doing pitcher lists and whatnot, I'm a baseball fan now, as you guys know. First and foremost, I don't care who my favorite team is playing. I root for the pitcher on the mound. Unless I don't like that pitcher at all. And
what is your favorite team though? What was
exactly? I don't even, I kind of don't even want to say it because like, I don't want to create anything. Right? I've worked hard to make sure that that's not how I feel. And also when it comes to the teams, guys, just so you know, they don't care about me. So I don't have any blind loyalty to any team. Like that's how I feel about it, but I'll root for the Yankees because I was born and raised in Brooklyn. I want to be happy in life, you know? Okay. All right. So I am that. And I remember, I think it was the 2016 trade deadline where they went out and got all the guy, you know, they did the whole trade with Gleyber Torres and they traded Andrew Miller and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I just remember there was a conversation going on, like maybe they're not or so. And I remember rooting for my team to lose. I was like, I just want you guys to lose so you can actually do it, you know, because let's not play this game of like, oh no, we put up together a good season, 83 wins. You know, the Cardinals won a World Series with that before.
Saints, I think, you know, yeah, I think there's some Cardinals fans that are in that bucket. You know, there's maybe, I don't know how Rangers fans feel, but you know, there's ones that are like right there on the cusp, you know?
Yeah. It's tough because I mean, I think you have to be honest with what your potential is. I actually remember talking on the SNY podcast about the Mets and saying, look, if you're the Mets right now, the Mets don't have a definitive playoff rotation. They just don't. Mm-hmm. And I would feel that I have to go and get something that is a statement that is showcasing, yes, we are a team to fear in the playoffs because our rotation can match up against others, right? And hopefully Sean Manaea, you know, is not having that decline of velocity that we just saw yesterday. And hopefully that David Peterson can keep going the way that he's going. Hopefully Kodai Senga can be that rock for them. But I would feel that, yeah, you need to do something here, right? You need to make that statement. And, you know, I guess what I'm getting at really here is there are a lot of teams that are playing this game of purgatory and they're like, okay with purgatory. And not first, you're last. Okay. So either, you know, realize, be real with the team. Are you a team that can actually do this? And if not, then be aggressive at that. There's a lot of opportunity to be had. You know, I remember last year or 2 years ago, John Gray didn't get dealt by the Rockies. Right. And I'm just going,
oh, that's always the one where you're like, why are you still here?
Why are you still here? There's always those guys. And it's, I
guess Rodon with the Giants that one year. But the thing with that was that Rodon had like a weird contract where he could opt out or opt in or something. And so sometimes there's weird contract stuff. But right, also hidden in what you're just talking about is something really interesting is that you were talking about the Mets sort of needing maybe something, you know, like a game one or two start, like a, maybe a game two starter. And I see a real difference between teams that need pitching, just any pitching, get me to the playoffs. I don't have a number five or I don't have a number four. And then there are teams that I think need an impact. So when I think of teams that need an impact starter, I think of the Cubs, the Blue Jays and the Mets most.
Yes.
Because, you know, those three teams have enough depth. The Toronto number five right now is Max Scherzer, which I know it's not young Max Scherzer, but like,
no, he's that's good enough.
That's good enough to get you to the playoffs, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the Cubs are doing fine enough with their rotation of guys. I mean, maybe they could use a five, but like they have such a good offense that they can sort of slug their way through, you know, one game a week where it's, you know, they have to score seven or whatever, you know.
And let's be honest, we should have the Dodgers in there too, because who knows what that staff will be, right?
I don't know. I think
I think it's always hurt by the end of the year. That was a hurt joke.
Yeah, I know. You know? But I think like I think of the Dodgers more as like maybe we need a number five starter.
Well, so right, no, I'm completely with you.
In terms of number five teams that need number five starters, I kind of think of the Padres. You know, could use
any Kolek starters. And Randy Vasquez at the moment.
Yeah, and they've been seeing a lot of like Bergeron and stuff. So I think the Padres could use any kind of starter. That puts them in a better position. I think the Yankees maybe could use any kind of starter. I like Cam Schlittler, but like maybe
any you could kind use of a, starter. Sorry, Marcus Stroman. I apologize.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. What's another team that could? Maybe Houston, they've been kind of running through gusto and they got some injuries.
Maybe but
they
Red also Sox have some guys too? Coming
back. Yeah, the Red Sox.
We just saw with the Rays that they just pushed Taj Bradley to AAA. And you got to have some concerns about Boz's workload. And Joe Boyle is now, I think, the number five in that spot.
I actually think the Dodgers could be more in this bucket where like, hey, let's just get a guy who can help us. I mean, they've done well with like Tyler Anderson types in the past, right? Like why not? I don't have to be Tyler Anderson this time again, but like, you know, just somebody who starts every fifth day and helps them their bullpen. They're using the bullpen so much, 440 something innings. Like they're like 40 innings out in front of everybody. So like just somebody who can go five or six and save their bullpen a little bit. So those teams, they have all sorts of people to choose from. There is Tyler Anderson himself. You know, there's Charlie Morton.
Bailey Falter with the Pirates guys, and he's going to go to the Rays. It's going to happen.
Get this like an eight hauser. You know, there's three lefties that I was writing them up and I was like, what's the difference between Jeffrey Springs, Andrew Haney, and Patrick Corbin right now? Like, in reality, like, you've got a lefty that could maybe go to the pen afterwards. Springs has had the best recent, you know, year of the three, but he also, his stuff is down. So it's like, if I was a team and I just wanted to have a lefty starter that I could put in the pen afterwards, I would just call those three guys, those three teams, and say, hey, this is here's a crappy deal, but there's three of you and one of you is going to take it.
Oh my gosh. That's an interesting way of putting that, right? And it's interesting. On this list, too, at the very end, you have Martin Perez, who, yeah, he's been in the IL for a while. I can't remember what the exact injury is, but that is a perfect example of, like, that Tyler Anderson type. Mm-hmm. We've seen him get into that rhythm and do enough to,
you know. God, I laughed at you when you mentioned the Corbin stat last time we potted, I think, and he's been good.
Yeah. Well, he actually had like two bad starts after that directly. It was the first time's over 300 runs, but then he returned. He actually had a really good one last night against the Athletics, albeit outside of Sacramento. That is a.
Is it just the like three fastball thing that he's added like to his,
right? Or
is it just
it's a sinker cutter slider essentially?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if you read the roundup for back a couple of years ago, you know, but he had a cutter, like he showed it the first time. And I was going, oh my gosh, finally, like you've been doing the sinker slider thing for ages and it's been so bad. Now here's a cutter. It's really good. And the next start, he didn't throw it. And I just go, what is this? And it was like this back and forth for a full year of me every single roundup going, where is the cutter? Throw more of the cutter. And then now it's here and it's pretty good. You know, yeah. At least he's serviceable. I think he has an under four ERA, Patrick Corbin. Yeah. Unbelievable.
But, I think we could see him be a trade.
Okay, so here's one. Here's an interesting one. You guys have him down the ranks a bit, but I think this is the perfect opportunity for a team that is on the outs. They're not really going to make the playoffs this year. It's just been the most disappointing year for them. So many things went wrong. That would be the Orioles. And Trevor Rogers is there. And they made this investment last year of saying, cool, Connor Norby. The other guy, Kyle Stowers, is it? Is it? Yes. Oh man, that's who it was. Okay, hitters. Yes. I don't know them. And
a little bit painful.
And the thing is, though, Trevor Rogers has all of a sudden become the ace of Baltimore. It's been four or five starts of just like, wait, hold on a second. I'm locating that four seamer upstairs. I'm getting my changeup consistently down. Sometimes it's 94 in the fastball. Sometimes it's 92 in change. Sometimes the slider's also there too. But he's been very productive. And while he does have another year of control with the Orioles, there you go. There's a good back end guy, even not just for this year, for next year as well. I would be interested in doing that with the Orioles because you really don't know if Trevor Rogers is going to hold this. And you might want to just get that value now and not really care about 1 year deal of Rogers instead.
Yeah, I wonder. The counter argument is obvious, which is that they are having a really hard time putting together a starting rotation, and you know, just right. To have at least, you know, one guy in the starting rotation next year. I mean, what would their starting rotation next year look like? It would start with Trevor Rogers. Kyle Bradish is back. That's right. Yeah, and then you'd hope Grayson Rodriguez is. Right. Figure something out, but I have to say the Grayson Rodriguez saga kind of seems like it's headed towards surgery. I haven't heard that word yet, but like,
I mean, he just tried the same exact pain in the elbow again.
Yeah, it's not good. Like, how does it keep coming back? Like,
what is your take on this? Essentially, when we see it the first time, you know, the rates of, hey, cool, I have elbow soreness or in a strain of some kind, and the likelihood of that turning into surgery.
Oh, it's so big.
It's so big. So anytime you see it and you see guys go, great, he's going to rest for 3-4 months. How do you feel with that? Is that what are you doing? You're delaying it, or like maybe it's worthwhile to do this?
I have spent like $1 bids out of $1,000, like to get Grayson Rodriguez back on my team. Just every like 3 months, every like couple months, I'm like, yeah, I'll spend $1. And maybe we'll get good news next week. And every time I do that, the next day, I feel like there's like, he's hurting again. We're gonna set.
So it's all your fault.
God damn it, that was a wasted dollar. But like, you know, I in terms of like nursing him through it on my roster, I've not done that. I can't do it. If I hear that, I'm
so so. I guess what I'm saying is, in general, you feel that. Do you feel that teams are mismanaging their players when these things happen is my question.
Well, I this is the other hand. So surgery is bad, you know, and even if Tommy John has like a 90%, recovery rate, there's still the 10% that don't come back from it. Mm-hmm. I don't think Spencer Strider is the same,
No, like, he's absolutely not. I've been banging the table on this, that his fastball is not what it used to be.
So there's like, and Sandy Alcantara's on our list, and like even if he's gotten a little better recently, like it's not all there.
So man, the changeup and fastballs,
So like, I think they just want to avoid surgery, and so they'll give it at least a chance to avoid surgery. But I wonder, especially for the Orioles, if they had made the decision earlier, they would have Grayson Rodriguez back at an earlier point next year. And at this point, they might have him just lose all of this year and all of next year.
Exactly. Right. So it's all about the timing of it. If it happens in March, it's just like, dude, you gotta cut your losses, kind of.
Yeah. I don't know what the right move is, but I just want to throw out there that like, surgery is bad and you should try to avoid it. So that's what they're trying to do,
Like, that makes a lot of sense. I do want to talk about some of those major names and kind of what you think would be the right fit, and really talk more about changing environments and the impacts that could have. We're going to talk about those guys like Zach Gallen and Alcantara, Edward Cabrera, and a few others after this break. So let's do Zach Gallen for a moment here. This has been a strange season, to say the least. I mean, over the years, it's really been a recipe of called strikes on the fastball that was always still hit hard, but the curveball was just so effective. And the changeup underneath it, sometimes the cutter and slider would appear too. But really, the fastball has been getting hit harder. There's been less dominance of the curveball thus far. And it's just gone bad for him. Do you think this is a case of, hey, cool, another team gets him, he's fixed, he's fine? Or do you feel that it's a bit of a trap for teams to be going after Zach Gallen?
Yeah, it's funny because July is the best K-minus BB month for him. Mm-hmm. And he had early in this month, he had a start against the Giants and Padres in a row where he had 19 strikeouts and one walk in 13 innings and, consecutive starts. And you think, oh, all right, we got something now.
Right.
And his next two starts are 9 strikeouts and 3 walks in 11 innings and 12 earned against the Astros and Angels combined. It's not the greatest offenses. I mean, Houston overall is a decent offense, but this is not the best Houston offense we're talking about. This is the injury.
You know what my quick take is on that, hearing it, is I think the Astros and the Angels, and I think right-handed lineups. And I wonder if Gallen is someone who can spot the down and away fastball easier to lefties, and that then sets up the curveball, and also it's easier for the changeup. I don't know how much credence there is to that. This is just my first instinct that I would go and check on our player pages.
Also, like, we've been banging the drum a little bit for Gallen to use the cutter more, but like maybe the cutter is just not something he needs to use against right-handed lineups.
So if you let's just say, great, now the Mets went off and got Zach Gallen. Do you see him differently away from Arizona and in Citi Field?
Some of the problem this year has been home runs. He has 23 home runs in 120 innings. Oof. And that's an easy thing where you can say, hey, just the park is going to help you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Arizona is a dome, but for some reason augments offense a little bit. So you could just say, hey, let's suppress the home runs and see how the rest of the K's and walks are okay for the year and getting better recently. I don't know. Also what you would do. The thing that I don't like is Arizona's not like a team that I think is backwards. And so there's not, and in terms of like me looking at, maybe his stuff splits or his pitches, there's not anything where I'm like, oh dude, you need to, like, I do think he could use the cutter more, but like, it's not by itself a great pitch. It's just that I think it makes the rest of his pitches a little bit better. But there's no like, oh, you dumbass, like, why aren't you? You know what I mean? Like, there's
language, like,
sorry. but that's he has like six pitches and he kind of like goes between them, and none of them right now, none of them are above average by Stuff Plus. And there's not even like recently the slider has been a little bit better, but that's, you know, what do you, like, I don't like, there's no like, oh, here's the plan. You trade for Zach Gallen and you tell him to stop throwing this and you start tell him to start throwing this.
Right.
Boom. And now he's
So there's two things that really stick out to me. I mean, one of them was what you mentioned already, the home run rates, right? And the other is actually a little surprising to me because I always consider this the opposite, especially for Arizona, that they've had a great defense for a while, except they don't now. They're actually in the bottom 30th percentile or whatever for team defense. And I'm looking at the hit per nine just straight up here for Zach Gallen, essentially 8 for 23 and 24, and now it's 9. I see his left on base rate at 65% as opposed to 75%, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
you could just be like, just
be as simple as doing this, because I'm all like, nah, don't look at the high level stuff. Look at the pitches themselves. That's all that matters. Yeah. And then I'm like, defense sucks. Okay, so get him out of there and give him a good defense behind him, which means to me, that's the Cubs. Oh boy, Cubs are an elite defense. And also, we've seen that Wrigley can suppress. I mean, it's weird when it comes to home runs there. Sometimes the wind goes out and you're like, whatever, that's the life you're living right now. But in general, I mean, we've seen with Matthew Boyd not going in Cleveland, which is helpful for lefties hitting home runs. Like, he's had fewer home runs in Wrigley this year. So that might be a surprising fit for Gallen, where you just need a good defense behind him. It might just be all he needs.
I had another little interesting thing I've just spotted, like hopping around. Maybe the Mets have another good fit for him. He's been throwing a sinker a little bit. The Mets love three fastballs. So maybe they turn the dial up on that sinker a little bit. And maybe, you know, I think that the Mets do have a pretty good handle on seam shifted Wake. They were all over Clay Holmes. And, you know, I think that that's been some of the work that they've done with Sean Manaea. And if you're adding sinkers to a lot of guys, you're doing a lot of seam shifted Wake stuff. So I think between our two guys, two teams, that there's something interesting there. What you'd buy with Gallen is you get a guy who can get you there. You know, he can be a five, but if you make the right tweaks, it's sort of like the Sandy Alcantara deal. It's like, if you make the right tweaks and, you know, maybe he rests at the right time, you might actually get a guy who starts game one, not game one, but game two or game three in a playoff series.
Absolutely. So, man, I didn't catch the sinker. He threw seven on the 7th of July against the Padres. And then he threw four of them against the Angels on the 12th. And then he didn't throw them against the Astros,
much,
which you would think. But what's even more interesting about it to me is I'm just looking at what the break is on this. I'm like, all right, first game, the one against the Padres, 17 inches of vert and 12 inches of ride, right? Of a horizontal ride or run. Then against the Angels, it was only 12 inches of vert and 11 and a half of horizontal.
It's definitely inconsistent. Yeah.
So either it's something of like there was, he missed it so poorly. They thought it was a two seamer because of that. It was maybe a four seamer. In that first one against the Padres.
Yeah.
But it is looking like he is throwing one because there's horizontal movement attached, right? Like it's 5.5 on the four seamer and 3.3 in the four seamer, the horizontal versus the 12 and 12, right? So that is kind of interesting to see that this does exist. It's not necessarily a great one, but having something that isn't the four seamer, that isn't the curveball, which can look like it if it's low, but when it's up, it's the fastball. That might actually be an interesting path. So I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you're also an acquiring team, maybe there's some opportunity there with the cutter and the slider. So the cutter, the slider, Stuff Plus, the slider's been better recently, but it also has been morphing a little bit to the cutter. So maybe there's a hard gyro slider, or maybe there's a breaking ball that you pull out of that cutter slider sort of mishmash right now, and you're like, this is the breaking ball that you need, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's some opportunity there. And I've always liked Gallen. Like I said early, and we were talking about pitchers that we like that the numbers say we shouldn't or whatever. Like Gallen was on my list because I think that he's made a lot out of a little for a long time. So I kind of think that he could do that. But, you know, if you are going to take that type, I think that Merrill Kelly and Seth Lugo kind of represent where Gallen could go. So why not take Lugo or Kelly instead?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a really good call. For both these, all three of these guys are free agents at the end of the year.
They're all free agents at the end of the year. They're all like, they're not going to wow you with stuff. None of them are going to be a game one starter. You know, I think most of them can be a game three starter. I don't think any of them like go to the bullpen in the playoffs. So, you know, why not take Lugo and Kelly? Because they're, I guess the answer is that maybe the Diamondbacks would take less for Gallen.
Or maybe there people can see a higher ceiling for Gallen. Gallen has had better seasons than both of those.
That's true.
So maybe someone thinks like, okay, we can unlock something. We're trying to get that impact pitcher and we don't feel that way with Merrill Kelly, for example, right?
So I don't see, a real exciting name behind. So the Diamondbacks, you know, they have two guys out there. And, you know, what it seems likely that one is going to go. I'm always fascinated with like who's next up and who would, you know, take over if they left. And I don't think it's Bryce Jarvis right now. They are starting him, but he's got a really bad walk rate. So, speaking of bad walk rates, maybe it could be Yelber Diaz, who himself is, not great when it comes to command. I don't know if you've spotted anybody else in that.
Is Christian Mania still there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Prospects. Oh my gosh. I haven't really, I mean, Ryan Nelson was the one,
and he is still there
and he's still there. Right. I mean, now he has that spot because of the whole Jordan Montgomery thing. But
Mania's hurt.
Oh, Mania's hurt. There you go. Okay. That really does bring me to another thing really quickly, which is just looking at the lists that you've made, which is fantastic of just kind of the next up guys. First of all, it's really funny to see Bailey Ober involved.
I feel like the rehab would just
completely like, yeah, yeah, it would accelerate. He's it kind of like back. It did with someone else. I can't remember who it was. Sorry, Gibson Long. But I'm going through this and yeah, next up Bubba Chandler.
Trade Mitch Keller, finally call up Bubba Chandler. How about that?
That's what we're waiting for, you know.
It's a pretty bad list actually. The team
what I was going to get at, right? Yeah. It's not like how I was. I remember in 23 I called that Ryan Yarbrough to the Dodgers was the best trade of the deadline. Because it opened up Cole Reagans to start for the Royals.
Okay, so that's the Bubba Chandler one. You know, if I rank them, I would put Joe Boyle and Jack Perkins next, maybe.
Well, Joe Boyle's already there, though.
Yeah, that's right. But he's kind of in this
Noah
weird
Schultz is an
spot.
Interesting one there with the White Sox and Adrian Hauser, but I got to feel like they're just going to let that one cook longer.
Mike Vassell is starter or something. Okay. But Jack Perkins, Joe Boyle are in these like three inning things, and I think they could become five inning things. JT Ginn, if they do two multiple
Ginn's
guys,
kind of interesting. I gotta say, yeah. Ginn. Okay, I've seen moments where he locates his sinker, and it's like 94, 95, not 93.
And it has a weird really movement this year. He changed the movement on his sinker, and it's almost a unique sinker. It's a very interesting sinker.
And then you have a cutter there as well, I believe. It's more than two pitches, but just what I remember. I think it is a cutter for one. Maybe it's a changeup. But I just remember watching this, been like, this actually, there is something there. He just hasn't had a lot of runway in the rotation thus far. Brandon Young is also kind of interesting for the Orioles. I was able to squint and see how it worked the other day. He was throwing splitters and curveballs and a four-seamer that has a lot of vert to it. And it wasn't so badly commanded as I see with a lot of young guys trying to make it work, especially ones that are just like, here, we need someone for a start. Just come on in. It does seem like, oh, okay, this overtime can work out, but it isn't something that I'm super excited about if he does get those opportunities. There is Chase Petty, maybe, who has been so bad in the majors, but before then was actually really exciting in the minors. He was a hard throwing sinker slider guy with a, I believe also a four seamer and command focus, like control focus. And then when he came to the majors, it was like six walks and you go, oh, well, when I see that, I think, well, that's yips. That's not your true talent. Right. So I would love to see Chase Petty just like have 2 months inside the rotation where the Reds are like, yeah, whatever, man, just do what you need to do. And
he's got a good sinker and sweeper combo that are above average by stuff plus, but barely. He's not a high stuff pitcher.
But he's like a 92 mile per hour slider, though, isn't it? Chase Petty?
Maybe the gyro, yeah.
I don't know. All right. I got to revisit that one. But that's the one that picked out right away.
I also just was like, oh, Robbie Snelling.
Oh, man. So many people have talked about Robbie Snelling. I want to be sold on Robbie Snelling.
I don't have
the name, right?
It's like it was a AAA start
in Maryland in one of the deals I think a year or two ago. And I did my yearly review and Robbie Snelling was like, yeah, it's fine. Maybe something in the
future. Stuff Plus says 110 slider and 108 four seam. So
108.
So like interesting four seam slider combo, sinker. He threw two. I'm not going to, 95 on that curve, mm-hmm. 94. So he doesn't have a third pitch. It's like that would make sense where he has decent K rates at times. But he also has pretty high home run rates and poor projections. The prospects report over at Fangraphs gave him a 45 fastball and a 45 slider. So I wonder if the Marlins have changed some aspects of his fastball. So I would like to see major league numbers. I would like to see him get a shot, not necessarily a shot where I have him on my roster during it, but I would love to see some major league movement numbers and see what has been so difficult for him, because there was a time when people thought, you know, he was a pretty good prospect. So
okay, so I like him better
than Adam Mazur. So
oh my gosh, yes.
Damning with faint praise, I think they call that.
Oh dear. Robbie Snelling. PLV has him, and this is astounding because we have an app for Appeal Pro users, which is our MILB pitch cards, really. And so I have his four seamer for all of his AAA games. This was actually only between July 10th and 20th. So it might just be two games, I believe, where he was throwing 94 on the four-seamer at 6 feet of extension. That's not good. 15 to 16 inches of vert. His attack angle is 1.1, which is pretty mid. So I see that and I go, well, that's not really...
16 inches of vert depends a little bit on what the slot actually is.
Right. But the 1.1 approach angle does to me suggest that it is slightly benefit. Like it's not like the super steep and that. It's kind of, it can work like that. But it's that to me, that's more of, okay, don't be turned off by the vert, but don't be excited by it.
Right. Yeah.
And he throws it though 66% of the time in the zone. So thus PLV, which takes into account location,
likes it.
Doesn't just like it, you know.
It loves it.
It's a 5.83 PLV.
Wow.
Which, right. If you don't know PLV, guys, when I see over a 5 on a fastball in the minors, I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. If I see like a 5.2, I'm like, oh, yeah. There's like no, maybe Jacob Mazurowski is over 5.83 in the majors, okay? So I think that's just because it throws so many strikes. I don't really trust this.
That's like, I want to see more. I want to see more.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, you know, with the Marlins having two irons in the fire, it's most likely we're going to see somebody there. And I just hope it's not somebody boring. I hope it's not Adam Mazur. I think it's, I would just like to see. Snelling seems to be working his way up. He's in AAA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, who has a better fan for a plus at least than Robbie Snelling's four seamer? Hmm. Billy Falters. Okay, so I'm gonna get some quick responses from you here. Zach Gallen, ultimately, where do you think he goes? Give me the prediction.
Mets.
Okay, I'm gonna stick with the Cubs here, and I do want to talk about Sandy Alcantara and Cabrera, but some dark horse trades we might have, some very interesting ones, the real steal that we might think of the trade deadline. We're talking about all of that after this break. So Sandy Alcantara and Edward Cabrera, I personally don't love what Sandy has been doing. I don't really think he's actually fixed yet. Maybe a team can feel that they can get his changeup back, or, you know, maybe the shift to nearly 50% sliders and curveballs that we saw last night from Sandy on Wednesday evening is the path for him. I don't think it is personally.
There's also a question of bulk, I guess.
Right. So yeah, how deep can he go coming back from Tommy John this year? I thought we were going to see a reverse crochet this year, and then it just didn't happen. Where do you think he goes, and do you think it's worthwhile for teams to be chasing Sandy Alcantara?
I wouldn't actually be surprised to see him go to somewhere like the Orioles, where it's not, you're like, why'd you do that at the deadline? It's like, well, we now know we have a starting pitcher for next year. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We get to bring him in house and we get to feel like we bought, you know, but you know, they sell, you know, maybe Morton and Rogers or just Morton and, you know, whatever. They sell the pieces that aren't around for next year. And they also buy at the deadline. I've seen teams do that. And I think when I think of Sandy, I think of there's some benefit for this year. There's more benefit for having a guy locked in for a couple of years.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's the same kind of argument for Mitch Keller, which is, you know, okay, we have cost certainty. We have a certain, we have like a mid rotation guy and he's there for a while. So that's maybe a weird prediction, but that one seems to line up where they don't necessarily need him for October because they're probably not going to October.
Yeah. What if they traded Trevor Rogers for Sandy Alcantara?
It's not make any sense at all. I guess it would be cheaper for the Marlins, but they had to like spend
the circle going around, you know. Yeah. then they'll trade Alcantara for Connor Norby and Stowers.
But you know, if we're talking about the top, like the guy, we go back to that Toronto, Chicago, who are the ones that we want? It's in Mets.
Yep.
Who are the real impact could be, you know, game two starters. I think it's Edward Cabrera and like in terms of who will really leave, it's Edward Cabrera. And so other teams like the Cubs may say, we didn't get Edward Cabrera or the Blue Jays. We didn't get Edward Cabrera. Let's get Sandy. And maybe, you know, maybe him and Max Scherzer are a tandem. You know,
right?
They each give us three innings down the stretch, and maybe that's pretty lights out. And maybe that actually works for a game three in the playoffs.
So, I mean, this is the thing that I keep going back to is infield defenses really matter with guys like Sandy and Merrill Kelly and with Gallen, even Seth Lugo, not so much with like your Joe Ryan, for example, right? And
who has
so
bad
teams that defense? Have that defense, I think, should be more aggressive, not in that Joe Ryan, but in actual guys that they will benefit more so. Where the numbers under, you know, the ERA and the WHIP necessarily won't show that, right? It's just in the higher level in that way. And then it can create more confidence and make them even better and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I think the Cubs should be getting at the very least Merrill Kelly. Like that should be your bottom entry. Like you got to make sure you get that because that's such a perfect fit. But then you also have stuff with the Nationals, right? You have like Michael Soroka, who is one of I think is a better target than, say, Nick Martinez is better than Zach Littell, Tyler Anderson, these other ones. I think Soroka's curveball is fantastic. I think his fastballs are well commanded enough. And I think that's a really good SP5 for you to have for those that are just trying to survive until October and to stabilize their team as they get there. He's just a basic long relief option that's fine to cover as well.
Yeah, the bottom of the market. I don't know. Charlie Morton, I'd like Charlie Morton, but then he the velo that he found, he lost again. At least, you know, it's shaky. So there's something with Charlie Morton where it's like, is he sitting 95 or is he sitting 93.5?
Right.
And for some reason that is everything.
And you know, a team, actually, I'm just thinking about this right now, is I don't know if we included them in the Get Me to October conversation, but the Mariners. Because Bryce Miller is just, what are we getting from that? And right now it's Logan Evans is in there, and Emerson Hancock. I mean, this is a team that is clearly obvious of needing somebody at the very end of it.
That would be weird, yeah.
And they should absolutely be in this conversation.
As a get me there guy, Nick Martinez, if you've got the money as a team.
Right, $6.7 million owed this year.
Yeah, it's a little bit expensive, but it is kind of an advanced arsenal. You know,
right.
And I think that the park that he throws in hides a little bit of it, and it's not without an outpitch. The Vulcan change is an outpitch, and he's got a sort of constellation of pitches around that works. So if you've got the money, you know, I think Nick Martinez could be actually super cheap because you just convince the Reds, hey, like, we'll take that $6 million off your books.
Right. All right. So, Eno, here we are. It's the trade deadline. You get to choose who is going where. This is it. Okay. Where is Ever Cabrera going?
Toronto.
Toronto. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I get that because they need this for the future, too.
There's rumors with the Cubs. You know, so I think Edward Cabrera is the prize of the deadline, honestly, actually.
Really? Oh, wow.
I think he's the only one that I could see that I would want to get started in game two.
See, here's the thing about Edward Cabrera is that I get so frustrated because I literally don't know what he's going to have in a given day still. He's figuring it out. He's understood that the four-seamer is not the pitch I should be using. Mm-hmm. I'm maxing that one. Great. But then even last start... after saying, hey, cool, I'm going to be throwing these changeups and this sinker and maybe some sliders and curves. Changeup was all of a sudden like a 50% strike rate. And it's like, well, never mind. I'm going to now get through this with sinkers and curveballs and sliders. And it's like
a wide arsenal. He's like figuring out which one works. Different day, different arm, you know?
So I have seen two things in the past of this, right? You can make two arguments of it. One, hey, he has so many pitches that it's like a canvas. You're making it as you go. And that's a good thing of like, you have so many choices and you'll have enough to get to the end. The other argument is like, well, if it changes every time, what I hear then is a lack of sustainability because there's nothing that is consistent. And that's what I side with after watching a lot of these guys over the years. I think I've gone to that side. I could be convinced for the other one. But it does bother me that we really haven't seen Edward Cabrera just be like, great, I have this and these are my skills and I'm going to do that. And I did that today. I'm going to do it tomorrow. It's still a little unnerving that that's the case with Edward Cabrera. And then you throw in the whole fatigue thing. It seems tough to really lean into that.
In the last 2 months, he's had 53 innings pitched with 59 strikeouts, 16 walks, a 2 ERA.
Yeah.
And the velo, you say fatigue or whatever, but the velo went from 96.9 on May 25th to 96.9 on August
8th. Oh, I'm only saying fatigue because that's what he called the elbow thing that he had. He said it was fatigue. Okay. I'm not talking about that in like actual decline of velocity.
And you're right that like there's these little game to game fluctuations in pitch type percentage, but you know, the curve has been, you know, he's used the curve more than, you know, 18% of the time in every game. He's used the changeup more than 15% of the time in every game, and he's used the sinker pretty steadily across those games. So I don't know. I just think that like, if I could make a range of predictions, it would be like Cubs or Blue Jays, because I just think they're the teams that like really want to make a splash in terms of stuff in the top, you know, two spots in their rotation.
So I think that's a really good call. Also, they need it, you know, past this year too. They actually need that stability going forward. I think that's a great call. And I'm just thinking about this of just the teams that are in this. Blue Jays, yes. Yankees, I could see them dealing Cam Schlittler. I think that he's great. I really do think that's a fantastic arm. I also recognize that the Yankees, like, that's cool, but we have this window right now, and we should be focusing a lot on this window right now and next year as much as we can. And I would not be surprised if they are trying as hard as they can for Joe Ryan. That makes all the sense in the world to me.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing that is hard for me to predict about the Yankees is like, you know, they don't look like they need an impact starter or game five starter, but the Yankees don't care what they look like they need. You know, right. they're like, no, we need to keep getting better.
Right.
So, you know, we could be like, oh yeah, they could just go get a, you know, like a Mitch Keller and have a five there. And that's, and mm-hmm. that would be good for them. But you know, the Cashman's like, yeah, we could have a Mitch Keller, but what about Joe Ryan?
Like, what about Mackenzie Gore?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know,
so you can't, that's a good call. That you can't count out the Dodgers and the Yankees or the Mets from doing something that's really doesn't seem to be on the board right now.
And then there's, you know, then there's Atlanta. With Atlanta is, I mean, they're 13 games out of 500, not just of the East. I mean, they're 44 and 57 at the moment. And then you look at the rotation. Yeah, maybe Chris Sale comes back in time, and I think that's a really fun a chance to take if you're a team, right? You're like, cool, maybe I can get that guy and have him in my playoff rotation all of a sudden. Oh my gosh. Like the right. Dodgers don't care about getting to it. They will. You know, the Yankees will. Maybe the Blue Jays are like, there's the cheapest way to have an ace for the playoffs. Right. Is to go after that.
But on the other hand, the Braves, you know, are trying to be good every year, and they would have Chris Sale under contract next year. So
that's a good point. Then it's also the year, so it's not as cheap as an excellent one. I mean, you even mentioned, I think, briefly, Jacob DeGrom. The Rangers, yes, they are 7.5 games out of the AL West. They are also very much in the wild card chase. I mean, I think they're actually either tied for the third one right now, or they're one game back. So you don't really want to give up DeGrom. At the same time, you could probably get a killing for it, especially as this plays out. The Phillies don't really need to jump in this because they just need a fifth guy that's not Taiwan Walker. Oh my gosh. Andrew Painter, yeah. But not really. I don't know. The Giants, where do they fit into this?
I think they could use a fifth starter.
Yes. Right. Yeah,
because they traded away Kyle Harrison. Birdsong is in the minors. They didn't call up Carson Wisenhunt as the corresponding move. They called up Seymour. I don't think he's necessarily a starter in the big league. So, they could use Andrew Haney. Why not? You know, like just a capable fifth starter.
And, so I do want to get this. So, Eno, I want to hear, I can help with you first. I want to hear your dark horse trade. Can include someone here. I cannot, but just really a pitcher going to a team that is just out of left field.
No, I already did mine though.
Which was that?
It was Sandy Alcantara to the Orioles.
Okay. All right. But someone that isn't. Yeah. Just like the most ridiculous. Like, I got this. Don't worry. It's going to be this random guy to this team. It's Hunter Green to the Mariners. What are you talking about? I'm kidding, guys. That's not it.
How about Sonny Gray?
Ooh, yes. Okay.
Sonny Gray to... I mean, he could go anywhere, but Astros?
He does feel like an Astros kind of guy. Like with the massive, just everything moves.
Yeah.
I instantly thought Padres. But because here's the thing with the Padres is that like Darvish is not really coming in, you know, into his groove. Pivetta is looking unbelievable, and they've been so thankful for that. And Dylan Cease, what is going on? Cease has already been in more rumors again. Even though
one problem though with Sonny Gray to the Padres though is that there's some money on there, and they're pretty tight on money.
With Sonny Gray.
Yeah,
that's a really good point there. But
they are already at $220 million, basically, next year.
Oh, wow.
And that's after losing Dylan Cease and Luis Urias. Or maybe they say, okay, well, Sonny Gray replaces Dylan Cease. I don't think that's an AJ Preller thing.
No, that doesn't seem right at all. And if you're the Padres right now, I mean, are you trading away Dylan Cease? Or do you feel that you actually have this full team that can make that run at the playoffs right now?
Oh, AJ Preller is high on his own supply. Like they're definitely. There's no. I just don't see. They're not getting better dealing Dylan Cease. I don't think they're selling.
Right. There's a part of me that feels like this is a purgatory team. As much as I want the Padres to do well, it's like this is not the crew right now to really stack up against the Dodgers, against the Phillies, the Mets right now. I don't feel it's complete enough. I mean, the Brewers are 61-41. I mean, there's another team that can maybe use one more guy.
Gray, it might be too expensive for the Astros, who are really trying not to go over that payroll. So my dark horse is Sonny Gray to the Giants.
Oh, I like it. I like it. I'm going to say to the Mets there. Mets. Everyone to the Mets, because Steve Cohen's like, I don't care money. That's my asset. I am going to throw in a pretty ridiculous one. Okay. And I think J.P. Sears is going to return to be a Yankee.
All right.
I have seen J.P. Sears the last few starts. I think he's starting to actually change who he is in a good way. He has embraced low changeups all of a sudden. This used to be a guy that would throw like sweepers all over the plate. I don't really care. Whatever happens. Fastball's there too. Sure, whatever. Let's call it a day. And now it's a changeup that is low, a sweeper that is in there for called strikes, kind of doing all the things. But the fastball, which has always been a flat attack angle, like that has been the thing about the heater from the left side, which we've seen generally has benefits for whatever reason. At 93, but it's a 1.5 attack angle. And we saw yesterday four seamers beautifully upstairs. I mean, this is like the best I've seen J.P. Sears in a complete pitch separation way. Took down the Rangers doing it. And I think that he's generally undervalued from a perception in the majors. And I can see this, like, it's essentially a lot of the Yankee formula.
He's like a four-pitch pitcher now, too, all of a sudden. He's throwing sinkers.
So this is my dark horse of the Athletics. Yeah, sure, whatever, J.P. Sears. You know, it's I guess it's going to be an arbitration soon enough for him. So they don't want to have him on the roster as much, right? Just throwing that. There you go.
I don't think he's much of an impact guy.
Well, right. Number five.
Yeah.
The Yankees need that.
All right. I like it.
There's my dark horse.
It'd be even darker if you said Luis Severino back to the Yankees.
Oh my gosh. No. Are you joking? I mean, I've already ranted about this, but the whole thing with the Athletics of like, hey, we have to sign Severino to get past our minimum to get revenue share. Great. So we did
now it. Okay,
now we're
going to
trade him away.
Well, now they're mad at him because he's talking crap on their situation. He's like, I don't like walking out to the clubhouse and, you know, mound isn't
good. As he should say it.
Yes, he should say it. Yeah.
You know, if you don't want him saying that, then improve it.
Yeah, right.
I hate that idea. You know, it's oh my gosh. Severino going somewhere, I guess, but like
I don't actually think anybody wants to take on that money.
Right.
And if they don't trade, because nobody signed him to that deal. They could have signed him to that deal and nobody did. And he hasn't been better since then. And I don't know. I don't think he's going anywhere. So I think they're locked in a death embrace. They hate each other.
And the other deal, I will say, in a historic mirroring of the past of Washington and Washington talking to each other, it would be Mackenzie Gore going to the Mariners.
Wow, they trade for pitchers.
So kind of like Eric Bedard. Okay, that's kind of going for Baltimore.
Wow.
Where do you
see Lugo and Kelly going?
Part of me feels like this is such a Mets move just like, I mean, before Steve Cohen, it was just...
He has 10 pitches.
We are not going to get the star. We're going to get... No, we got Jason Marquis equivalent, right? Like, it's always...
we got Jason Marquis.
Like, it's never quite, and they have to sell it more. But I love Lugo. And of course, there's a whole relationship there with that. And then I would say Merrill Kelly. I really do think Merrill Kelly to the Cubs is just such a good fit. And it's just a match made in heaven. Do you think the Tigers are going to do anything? Do they have enough depth? They got to get something. Right? Something
they don't happen. It doesn't seem like, what did they do at the last deadline? They sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They sold Flaherty. That was pretty cool.
I don't think that they'll buy hard.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
Scott Harris is like of the Farhan Zaidi. You know what they do? They'll do something like, what did Farhan Zaidi do? Chris Bryant. Now, I know that's, it sounds bad in the back, but what'd he do? He paid nothing for Chris Bryant because nobody wanted him. But right. He thought, hey, this might work. So like there might be somebody on this list that nobody wants comparatively. Maybe it's the Soroka idea.
Yeah, maybe it's Adrian Hauser. Tigers.
Yeah, or Hauser. Yeah. They're just like, hey, nobody's talking to this guy. We just traded for Aaron Savali.
Right. Right. So
I could see them buying small, you know, and getting a number five starter. I mean, they go with Scoobal basically, you know, right. And I think in terms of twos and threes, they probably have twos and threes. Mize and Olsen is, you know, it's
still and Clarity, you hope would be there too. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. That is it for this episode of the Trade Deadline. We just kind of just hanging out.
Predictions sure to be wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Except mine. but reminder, next week, the Trade Deadline Extravaganza, 4 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube, youtube.com/pitcherlist and playback.tv/pitcherlist. Maybe I can convince Eno. He's probably going to be busy with doing something. I don't know, to pop on as well.
I've got my own live show, Rates and Barrels.
You might have heard of it.
Yeah, of course they do. We'll exchange notes. Watch it. We'll crash each other's randomly.
Mine's only actually like an hour and a half, so I might actually be able to jump in at the beginning or end something.
All right, good. I think seeing you and Spore always in the same room is always a fun thing. You know, it's great to have you back. You look well. And here's two things that make us go, what?
What?
Oh my God!
He went where?
Oh, where's Jack Leiter going? Okay. I can't wait. And looking forward to everything that you do. Of course, talking about the deadline as well. But on the behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.